Chazorashe Perek Gimel Mishnah Hay until Perek Hay Mishnah Gimel. Perek Gimel discusses all the halachas of someone who has illegal relations, and the Mishnah from Mishnah Hay discusses the differences between an Oynes and a Mefateh. An Oynes is someone who has illegal relations by forcing the woman, and a Mefateh is someone who has illegal relations but the woman does it willingly. And one of the differences is that an Oynes must marry her, even if he doesn't want to, even if it's a woman who usually people would not want to marry, he needs to marry her. However, if it's someone who he would not be able to marry, for example, she's an erva of his, then he is also to marry her. If a Naira who is engaged is forced to have relations, yet she's no longer in her father's authority, for example, she's an orphan or she had previously been engaged and divorced from that engagement, then the fine goes to herself. And in such a case, Rabbi Elazar holds that if it's a case of Mefateh, that she did it willingly, then she does not get the fine, since by doing it willingly, she's forgiving the man for the fine and telling him he doesn't have to give her the fine. The Mishnah then discussed how we measure the payments, and boishes, which is a payment for embarrassment, is higher the more important the person who is embarrassed is, and the less important the person who does the actual embarrassing is. Pagam, which is the payment for damage, we measure that by the value which she is reduced by were she to be sold as a maidservant in the marketplace, and kanas, which is a fine, is the same for everyone, 50 shkolim. 50 silver coins. We then discuss the differences between a ketano nara begeres. Ketano is someone below the age of bas mitzvah. Nara is 12 to 12 and a half. Begeres is above 12 and a half. A ketano can be sold by her father, but if someone forced her to have relations, there's no kanas, there's no fine. A nara cannot be sold, but she would have a kanas. And a begeres can neither be sold and no kanas if she is forced to have relations. We then brought the rule, which is moide beknas potter. If you confess to owing a fine to someone else and you're potter, since you're only chayiv if it's compensation. The beginning of Perek Daled told us that all the payments for the woman go to the father, and therefore if the father dies after she's been to the Beis Din to claim the payments, then her brothers will get it by inheriting from the father. But if the father dies before that, or she becomes a begeres before that, meaning the father would not get it, since a begeres is outside the father's authority, then she gets it, not the brothers. And according to Rabbi Shimon, it's even if she hasn't yet collected it, not only that if she hasn't been to Beis Din yet, but even if the father dies before she collects it, then she would receive the payments herself. On the other hand, everything she earns or finds while her father's alive, even if she doesn't get it until the father dies, then the brothers will inherit that, since that is a monetary thing rather than payment for damage. If a woman is divorced only from an engagement, then her ksuba goes to her father, since she's still under her father's authority. However, if she's been married before, then it would go to her. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, even if she's been married before, since the ksuba was written while she was not yet married, and therefore in her father's authority, her father would get it, since it depends on when it was written, not when it was given. The Mishnah then talked about a motzi shemra. Motzi shemra is when someone accuses his wife of not being a basula, and meaning that she had relations while she was engaged to him. And if that is found to be true, then she is stoned outside her father's house where she grew up. And if it's not true, then he has to pay a fine of 100 silver coins. And the Mishnah said that that only applies to someone who is born Jewish, but if it's a gioris, a convert, then it doesn't apply, because the Pasuk says, Basulas Yisrael. It's got to be someone who is born as a Yisrael. If her mother converted while she was pregnant with her, then she gets skilo rather than chenek. She gets stoned rather than being strangled. And that is learnt out from a posuk. However, she still does not go to her father's house. And if it's false, then the husband does not need to pay 100 silver coins. And if she doesn't have a father, or she doesn't have the father's house, for example, he's homeless, then she still receives skilo. The father's house bit is only an added bonus. From here, the Mishnah discussed all the rights and responsibilities of a father and husband. A father can, number one, receive the kiddushin, the engagement for his daughter, and the three ways to do that are through money, document, and by giving her over to have relations. Number two, he gets everything that she finds or earns. And number three, he can receive the get on behalf of her, and that only refers to a get of engagement, because only then is she still in his authority. When she gets married, the husband has all of the previous things, plus he can also have benefit from any produce from a field which she inherited. And he has three obligations. Number one, he has to feed her in return for getting what she earns. Number two, he has to ransom her if she gets captured in return for having the produce from an inherited field of hers. And number three, he has to pay for her burial in return for her dowry, which is the gift which she brings into the marriage in the first place. In return for that, he needs to pay for her burial. And Rabbi Huda said that even if his family's minhag is to provide two people playing the flutes and one woman wailing, there was a certain minhag, if that was his minhag, Just like during her lifetime she follows his minhagim, so too after she's died, she still goes according to his minhagim, and therefore if it's his minhag, even if it's not hers, then he still needs to provide those two flute players and the wailing woman for her burial. Mishnah Hay told us that she is transferred from her father's authority to her husband's authority as soon as her father or her father's messengers are no longer with her, and she is in the authority of either her husband or her husband's messengers. The father is not obligated to support his children. However, we would force him if he refuses to, but the straight letter of the law is that he's not obligated to support his children. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah learned this out of the Ksuba. It says that the sons will inherit and the daughters will be fed. We learn from there, just like the sons only inherit after the death, so too the women will only get the food after the death, but during his lifetime they will not be supported by their father. We then brought a number of Mishnayos discussing all the conditions in the Ksuba, and the fact that if someone misses out any of them, he's still obligated to abide by them, since that's the condition which the Chacham made. Number one, if he didn't write a Ksuba at all, then he still needs to pay 200 zuz or 100 zuz when they get divorced or widowed. Number two, if he didn't write an Achrayas Nechosim. An Achrayas Nechosim means that he says that any field can be a substitute for the money. If I don't have enough money to pay you, then you can collect the value of 100 or 200 zuz from the fields. If he didn't write that, then he is still obligated. Number three, to ransom her and then remain married unless she's a kohen. Number four, that her sons will get the Ksubas Benin Dichrin, which was again the dowry which she brought into the marriage. So since the fathers would give a lower dowry, so we made it that the sons of that woman specifically would get the would inherit the dowry. Number five, her daughters will be supported by his leftover money after he dies until they get engaged. Number six, that she will be supported after he dies. And however, in Yehuda, the minhag was that as soon as the father's inheritors want to give her ksuba, then they're no longer obligated to support her. We also mentioned that if she gets captured, he is also to just divorce her and say she can ransom herself, since ransoming is an exchange for the benefit which he can have from her fields which she inherits, and he's never paid back for that because she's never got captured before. However, he would be mutter to divorce her instead of paying for her medicine, since that's in exchange for his support of her, and he's been doing that all his life, so he has already paid her back for that, and therefore he can divorce her and tell her to pay for the medicine with the money he gives her. The beginning of Perek Hey told us about a Tosefes Ksuba, which is the added bit of a Ksuba, that someone can increase the Ksuba, he can give it more than 100 or 200 zuz if he wishes to. And if she gets in divorced or widowed from that, then according to the Tanakama, even if it's from Erusin, even if it's from engagement, then she still gets the Tosefes Ksuba. Whereas according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, if she's only divorced from the engagement, then she would only get the 100 or 200 zuz, but not the added bits of the Ksuba. We then had a fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, whether you can write less than 200 or 100 zuz to the woman if she agrees. According to Rabbi Yehuda, since the kasuba is midrabbanon, so you're allowed to do that if she writes that she's received part of it, and therefore they only have to pay back the remainder. Whereas according to Rabbi Meir, since the kasuba is midoraisa, you're not allowed to even be married to her if you don't give her the right amount for the kasuba. After being engaged, from the moment that the husband or the wife asks the other one if they can get married, they have to allow 12 months for preparation. However, for an almana who's already been married before, she only requires 30 days. If that time came and the husband was a kohen, so now he becomes obligated to support her and give her food. And whereas before that, while she was engaged, she was not allowed to have truma, in case she'll feed it to her family. Once the time has come for the marriage, she's already sort of left her house, and we're not worried she's going to feed her family, and therefore she can eat truma from him. Then we had a machlokes between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, whether he can give her truma whilst she's tomei, and then she'll have to sell it for chulin, just like he needs to when they're actually married. According to Rabbi Tarfon, he does not need to do that. Since they're not yet married, he doesn't have to do that. He can just give her truma and she can sell it while she's tomei. As a contrary, Akiva, while she's tomei, he has to provide chulin for her so that she won't eat truma while she's tomei. However, if the future husband dies and then she falls for yibum, which is when the brother of the husband needs to marry that woman, even once the 12 months have been reached, he cannot give her truma, since you can only give her truma because you've acquired her, but the Yovan was not the actual one who acquired her, and therefore he would not be able to until he actually gets married to her. And then we said all of this, that he can give her truma before they actually get married, is only what they said originally, but then later on, since the Kiddushin might be cancelled later on when he finds out that something's wrong with it, so, and then it would come out that she wasn't engaged to him and therefore she wouldn't be able to have eaten Truma. So he said that actually she can only eat Truma from the moment that she's completely married to him, even once the 12 months have been up, she has to actually be married to him in order to eat Truma.